Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Tree City Sports Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Baker. I'm joined by my co-host, Graham Mullen. How's it going, Graham?
Oh, it's going fine. You know, just I'm doing a podcast right now in my garage because my parents are asleep. So, that's right.
That's what being a millennial means, still living your parents' house in the 20s. That's where we're at.
I will talk as loud as I can, and I'm probably, and it should be fine, but if any point I start to trail off a bit, just let me know, Andrew. I'm not trying to deal with all that, you know what I'm saying?
Indeed, and I am also, we're a bunch of whiners today, I am also compromised. I have allergies, so if I sound like complete crap, much apologies to your ears.
Millennial problems. Your brain
for having to comprehend it. So,
millennial problems.
LeBron James.
Yeah,
I don't even want to talk about the Cavs, honestly, because it's just like, at this point,
LeBron, doesn't it kind of feel like
honestly, at this point, if you told me LeBron would have a massive series against the Warriors and the Cavs would lose, I'd probably just be like, honestly, I'm kind of cool with it, just because this almost matters more for LeBron's legacy than it does for the Cavs at this point. And that sounds ridiculous, but let me explain myself very briefly.
Okay.
You can tell me what you think. So, LeBron already came back and got the Cavs a title. So, we all agree he doesn't owe us anything anymore. Not that he ever really did in the first place, but the perception was that he did, and now the perception's gone. So, right. He's delivered. And he's basically said he has nothing left to prove, and I agree. But watching the Cavs now, he's just such a singular force that I'm almost watching these games and caring more about his performance than the team's performance, because the team already won their title and anything else is just icing on the cake. And don't get me wrong, I would absolutely love to beat the Warriors. It would be freaking awesome. But it's like, LeBron has done so much to carry this team. I don't think you can be mad in any sense at all if they don't win a title this year. And I think that if they lose and LeBron plays extremely well, then you can look at it realistically and say there's nothing else he could have done. If LeBron doesn't have that good a series and the Cavs lose, it's just going to be depressing because we've come to expect such greatness. So I almost feel like if he has an incredible series and the Cavs lose, I'm really not going to be that upset.
He did everything he could.
The cards are stacked against him and the Cavs. And if they win the series or lose the series, it's not going to be solely determined by LeBron, obviously. But, yeah, again,
I think some of the fault has been a loss here,
and I think they're probably going to lose. Not that it's guaranteed, but at least if LeBron plays well, we can look back and say, like,
it wasn't his fault.
Yes, and, like, we are witnessing one of the most dominant stretches we've ever seen from a basketball player. And win or lose, his domination is what I watch the Cavs for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, we only get to, like I said in the last podcast, I mean, he's probably the second best player of all time, or if you want to argue it, he's the best player of all time. I don't know if you're ever going to see, and like we said, you're never going to see this type of Cavs team again, not because the Cavs could not be good again once LeBron leaves, but just because the fact that the Cavs have maybe one of the – not maybe, definitely one of the greatest players to ever play this game. And his will to win, his determination to not give up on his teammates, even though they were missing early on in game 7, he kept passing to them because he knew, well, both A, he couldn't do it by himself, and B, that he believed in those teammates. J.R. Smith hitting 3 big threes. Kyle Korver only made 1 3-pointer, but it was a big 3-pointer because it kept the Cavs in that game in the third quarter.
Yeah, how about this? How about this? Kyle Korver makes 1 3. And the Cavs win the game. If I would have said that, if and he's been their second best offensive player for a lot of these playoffs. If I told you that before the game, you would have said that seems almost impossible.
I mean, but him and JR had 4 combined 3-pointers, and the Cavs still won the game.
Yeah, I mean JR, you know, didn't have a great game, but in the second half he made 3 threes.
And he also played good defense, which he has been doing the entire series, despite the fact that his offensive struggles have been there.
Yeah, everyone notices the shooting, and it sucks, but JR has been very good defensively. I want to say one thing about LeBron and his ranking in history, and I'm not going to get into the Jordan LeBron debate right now. I think that most people would agree that that's the debate, is those two. There's others you could include, you know, Kareem, Magic, others. But I didn't watch Michael Jordan play almost at all, and certainly not when he was playing. I've seen, you know, replays, etc.
Yeah, we weren't alive, or we really right. we weren't cognizant of the fact that he was playing. Like, I correct. Think I was 2 when he won his last title with the Bulls.
I think you were 4 and I was 6. So
wasn't it 96 that he won his last
title? It was 98, but regardless this just shows
we didn't remember
alive back then. But yeah. So, you know, but I've researched enough to know to have an opinion on the subject, but I'll say this. Regardless of who is the quote-unquote greatest of all time, because a lot of different things go into that, and anyone's going to have a different opinion on what greatest means. I can say, without a shadow of doubt, that no player in the history of the NBA could do as much for a team with as little as around him as LeBron has done throughout his career, especially with the Cavs, including this season,
yeah,
including 2007. I don't know if that means he's greater than Michael Jordan, and I'm not sure my opinion really matters that much. But I do know, for a fact, no one else could do what LeBron's doing right now to carry these teams to where they're going.
Yeah, I mean, I think every game that you can watch LeBron is a treat, and I tried to watch as many games of the 100 so far this year. I've probably watched 85 of them, just and strictly all of it was – all right, I want to see what LeBron's doing. Like, obviously, the rest of the team is you want them to do well, but like watching LeBron, just it seems so effortless to him, especially when he's hitting like those fadeaway jumpers he was hitting in the Toronto series, or driving to the basket and knowing that no one on this planet that plays basketball can stop him, or when he hits when he hit those 2 step back threes in Game 6 to send it to a Game 7. Like, you don't see those things every single day, or really. Every year you're only with LeBron do you see that, and LeBron is a once in a 20 to 25 year type of player, once in a generation. I mean, yep. he's just so amazing, and it took and the fact that Jeff Green was
let's get to the topic that Graham really wants to talk about on this podcast. Go ahead, Graham. Graham, have your moment. Explain to the people why this is your moment and what it means for you.
I mean, obviously, we all know that this past summer, the Cavs signed a bunch of players. They had the Dwayne Wades, the Isaiah Thomases, traded for, had all these big additions. And then we had a small little under-the-radar signing of Jeff Green signing for the veteran minimum for the Cavs. And I remember everyone telling me that, like, hey, what, including you, like, Jeff Green's trash. I don't know why we signed him. He's never been good anywhere he's been.
He literally has not been good. It's a fact.
And I get that. But I'm just like,
For some reason, you knew. And go ahead, tell them.
But like, I think I prefaced it by also just not having massive expectations of him. I wasn't expecting him to realize his potential finally of being a top like 5 pick in the draft and going on to be a stud for the team. But what I did know about him from watching, he's a very good defender. I wouldn't know if I'd call him great. He's a very good defender. He can switch positions when he defends.
Very versatile.
Yeah, he can guard 3s, 4s, and in small lineups, if they're playing a small guy at the 5, he could guard the 5 even. He's good on the wing as a defender. He's good guarding people in the post. Because he's very strong. He's almost the same weight as LeBron. So, like, he has that ability to bang people in the post. And not only that, he's just – I didn't expect him to score, obviously, as much. But he really showed, like, throughout the season in flashes. Obviously, he didn't do it consistently throughout the year. And there was times when he was borderline unplayable. Like, in the first series against the Pacers, it pretty much just was like, take him out. He's playing like crap. And, like, they spent one game with him starting before they realized it wasn't worth it. But he has fought through all of this. He played great defense. He was guarding Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, who you said before Game 7, like, he's not going to make any shots. He was 3 of 12 from 3.
Yeah, I did absolutely call that before Game 7. I said Brown's going to have – Jaylen Brown's gonna have a turd of a game. I just expected it completely.
But Jeff Green,
which doesn't mean that I'm a genius. It means I was right this time.
Yeah, I mean, but to say one more thing about Jeff Green, like, the reason I was so confident is because, and we just talked about him, has he ever played with LeBron James before? No. He has never played. The greatest player he's played with to this point was probably Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, and Kevin Durant.
Durant.
But that was Durant before they were this great. And those players don't help their teammates as much as LeBron does.
Right. And, like, when you have someone that believes in you as much, and Ty Lue even believes in him a ton, like, Ty Lue loved him, and he was willing to give him the opportunities. Ty Lue didn't have perfect – obviously wasn't perfect in these playoffs, and we've criticized him for his decisions sometimes, but – he trusted Jeff Green. Jeff Green played 42 minutes in game 7.
Go ahead.
And while he didn't shoot well from 3, I think he was like he was like 3 of 9 from 3. He was 5 of 5 from inside 3-point range.
Let me interrupt you very briefly. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm just going to sum together our first 2 points about this game 7, about this series. And I'm going to validate both what I said about LeBron and what you said before the season about Jeff Green being a useful signing for the Cavs. The Cavs won a game 7 in Boston against the number one defensive team in the league that had not lost at home in the playoffs this year, with Jeff Green as their number 2 scorer playing 42 minutes.
He had 19 points.
I'm going to cuss, okay? Just a fair warning. That's fucking unbelievable, okay? Because that says so much about where this Cavs team is and the season they've had, and it says so much about how Jeff Green has performed compared to the expectations for him for most people, and that says so much about the dominance of LeBron James. I mean, that's just – it makes no sense. It doesn't seem possible, but that's the reality we're in because LeBron and because you were right about Jeff Green. I think we also need to discuss the Celtics did kind of like crap the bed a little bit.
They self-destructed.
LeBron didn't play everyone's freaking out about this game and comparing it to the list of his greatest achievements of all time.
I don't think it was an all-time.
I understand it. Because it was an incredible achievement. He played all 48 minutes, and he saved energy less than usual. And, again, I've said he's the only one that can do it. But I think the greater accomplishment for LeBron isn't this Game 7 in and of itself, because he's had incredible closeout games before, and it's become the norm. And I'm not – to expect that from him shows the level he's at.
Right. But
this entire playoffs, the level of dominance and the level of how much the balance of the game is decided by one person, this entire postseason run has been just a spectacle. And I think this is as close to the 07 Cavs as we've seen since that team, where a team with one decisively above average NBA starter is going to the finals. And it's crazy. But I do think that LeBron didn't have his absolute best game 7. He had a great game and he had an impressive game, but he's had better games. And the fact that the Cavs didn't really play that well in the first half, they basically just kept it close and let LeBron do his thing in the second half, which is a perfectly reasonable game plan. Okay. But
yeah,
I think for whatever reason, I'm not going to sit here and say the moment was too big because, I wasn't in the locker room. I'm not aware of how these guys felt during the game. Okay. So I'm not going to say it's because the moment was too big for them, but several Celtics had really bad games. And
they could have built a brick house with all the threes they missed.
Oh my God. Terry Rozier was 0 of 10,
and they
Terry
weren't even
Rozier
like close
had a great
threes.
Playoffs. And yeah. Jaylen Brown was like, 3 of 12, and he's had at one point people were talking about how he's been so good they might be able to trade him for Kawhi Leonard straight up, which is like, first of all, let's just calm the hell down, okay? And second of all, he did have a great postseason. He's a really good young player, and so is Rozier.
He's 21.
But, again, I'm not going to say it's because they. I don't know those guys, and I don't know how they felt. But if you look at it, the Cavs gave up a lot of open looks that didn't go in.
And oh, yeah.
That doesn't make what LeBron did less impressive. It doesn't make what Jeff Green did less impressive. But it is a fact that if the Celtics had played their best game, then the Cavs probably would have lost. But that shouldn't be a big surprise considering what talent is left in the Cavs roster. But
I think the shocking part was just like how bad the threes were being missed. They weren't even close. Like they were short rimming them all, or they were like hitting the backboard. They were basically doing everything besides hitting the cylinder. I was just like, oh my God, they can't keep missing like this. It's just mathematically impossible. Eventually these shots are going to go down.
Yeah. Just but like you thought about the Houston Rockets. Anyways, we'll talk about that later, but continue.
Hey, okay. Well, it's just crazy to think like they were, when your backcourt shoots 3 of 22 from 3-point range and they even kept it as close as they did for that long. I think that's a good thing for saying into our next thing.
It's not good.
No, I think it transitions into our next topic though, which I think was another Boston downfall.
I know what you're going to say, and I can already tell you I agree 1,000%, and go ahead and explain what you're going to say.
Why didn't they realize that Jason Tatum was the
Cavs are lucky, man. And the Cavs are lucky that they didn't. And I don't, and Brad Stevens, and right,
like
Brad
I don't
Stevens
get it.
Rightfully gets a ton of credit for being a great head coach and for creating some would call it Popovichian system in which everyone eats, they share the ball, they play hard. There's a culture of accountability. He deserves credit for all.
You gotta make those threes though if you share the ball.
Yes, exactly. He deserves credit for all of that. But I think, considering how much of a rock fight Game 7 was, okay.
Horrible.
Scores in the 80s are pretty rare in the modern NBA. But that's
like what 87, 70.
Oh God, whatever it was, it was a rock fight. So considering the situation of the game. And you could say, look, they were good looks, they got to make them, which is 100% true. But Jason Tatum was the one guy, especially during the fourth quarter of Game 7, that really looked like he had the balls to be out there and win the game. And that says an incredible amount about him as a player. He dunked fully on LeBron. LeBron has ever been dunked on in his entire career. And Tatum got in his face and told him something about it. And I respect the hell out of that. And I guarantee you LeBron does too. Because for a 20-year-old player to do that is incredible. And then he hit a three directly after that. And at that point, it was an extremely close game. And the momentum was starting to swing to the Celtics because of what Tatum had done. And then he didn't get the ball the rest of the game.
Yeah, that's why I'm okay with saying the fact that the rest of the team choked is because they had a 20-year-old rookie who was clearly too big of a moment for him. Like if Brad Stevens had been smart and just said, you know what, screw the ball movement, just give Tatum the ball at the top of the post.
Get a switch. Get J.R. Smith on him and let him go to town. That's not a good way to play for an entire game, as the Cavs have shown. It's not sustainable unless you're literally LeBron James. Okay.
Everyone
knows how I get that Hubie Brown okay after I say things. I'm getting old. But anyways, shout out to Hubie Brown. Tatum, look, he's an old, don't be mean. He's old, okay? He's had a good career. Shout out to Hubie Brown. Tatum was cooking. And at a certain point, I think the Celtics probably should have made sure he was the one taking more of the shots down the stretch. But that's, again,
he'll be the third best player on the team
guys in their early 20s. And
he'll be the third best player on the team next year.
Yeah. Maybe. He could be sick. He could be the best player on that team within a couple of years. It would not surprise me.
Oh, yeah. No, that I agree with. But next year, when they get Kyrie and Hayward back, he's going to be the third option on that team. That's going to be a scary, scary team.
Oh, yeah. And that brings into a lot of questions about the future of the Cavs and the future of the NBA. And
I think even if LeBron stays
at some point, but
yeah, just quick thing. I think even if LeBron stays, I think the Celtics should be the favorite.
Yeah.
If all of them come back healthy.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have Jaylen, because their starting five is going to be Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and Al Horford.
That's not bad. Not bad.
good fucking luck. Jesus Christ.
Not bad.
Like, that team could put up 130 points a game.
Not bad.
And they're all good defenders except for Kyrie. And that's, I just, that's just Kyrie. But anyway, yeah. Like, yeah, I think Jason Tatum showed in this playoffs that he is going to be an MVP candidate probably in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, and you saw what LeBron said after the game. You know, I think
he probably
LeBron,
said go sit on the couch,
LeBron,
young man.
More than anyone respected the way he played and that dunk. And I think LeBron's able to look at young guys like that and not get angry. He's just going to say, like, you know, damn, like, I was impressed by that. And
do you think it's a mind game, though, with LeBron? Like, do you think
everything's
like,
a mind game with LeBron?
If I'm nice to them, then they aren't going to be as intense when they play me.
Take the edge off or whatever. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I think LeBron's a guy that has his legacy secured, and he sees the future of the game, and he's not afraid of it. Like some older players have been,
like Kobe.
Yeah, I said some. I wasn't trying to add him, but yeah, exactly.
Kobe is example A through Z.
Right.
He hated every young player.
Also, Paul Pierce.
Well, Paul Pierce.
Except Paul Pierce thought he was Kobe, and he's not. Anyways, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Damn it. We almost got to the Game 7 podcast without roasting Paul Pierce, but it's just too easy. It's just too easy. It's right there. He looked so miserable in the studio after that game. He looked like he wanted to be anywhere but discussing LeBron beating the Celtics again. He was having PTSD. He was sitting there shaking and sweating. I'm like, bro, I'm sorry. It's happened to you a few times. But anyways, now we've just gotten off topic of just destroying Paul Pierce, which is fun. But
well,
where...
I mean, it kind of transitions because now we're going to get destroyed in the next series, probably.
Oh, yeah, probably. You know, the Cavs are massive underdogs in this series, according to the books.
That's an understatement.
And I think we're at a point now. So the Cavs and the Warriors have gotten to the finals 4 years in a row.
Four straight years.
That's never happened before. And
it didn't? Not even with the Celtics and the Lakers?
It did not. And
wow.
You know, I think
LeBron's going to have to put up 60.
Well, yeah, we can get into what the Cavs are going to have to do to win in a moment here. LeBron's going to have to average 55, 15, and 15. But, you know, you look at the Cavs and the Warriors this year, and I think the Cavs are massive underdogs, as they should be.
Again, understatement.
Right. And I think that's even with looking at this Warriors team, and especially if Andre Iguodala is going to be not playing or not fully healthy, I don't think this Warriors team is as good as last year's team. Nearly.
They're not as deep.
And I don't think they're really that much better than the team they had before Kevin Durant, because they don't really have five guys right now. They have four. And their bench is struggling, and they can't figure out who should be their fifth starter. And despite the fact that Golden State is not at their best, I really struggle to see a path for the Cavs winning the series. And I think that goes to show that experience and having been there before and especially having extreme high-end players is still what matters the most in the playoffs. And I think, you know, it goes to show you something. The Cavs and Warriors aren't as good as they've been in years past, either team. And here we are again.
Yet this might be the least competitive series.
I don't know. I think we know what the Cavs are going to do. We don't have to get into specifics about, you know, how to play that much, because it kind of is what it is. You know, for the Cavs to win this series, they have to slow it way down.
Some miracles are going
to happen.
They're
going to have to play at an incredibly low pace. They're going to have to out-rebound the Warriors by a pretty wide margin, considering their
George Hill's going to have to be Chris Paul defensively.
George Hill's going to have a great defensive series. So is JR. Korver and JR are going to have to be on for multiple games. LeBron's going to have to be just – LeBron's going to have one of the
best series of all time.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, if you look at what LeBron did in 16, which was just incredible, I don't know if that's good enough this year.
But he had that comfort.
You know,
he had that comfort of Kyrie, which he doesn't now.
That's where I think the biggest issues are going to come, is because LeBron's going to have to play really hard minutes. On offense and defense in the series. And when Kyrie was here against the Warriors, LeBron could take possessions off. And that's how you get plays like the block, because LeBron still had some energy at the end of games. These games are going to have to be like Game 7 against the Celtics, where the Cavs keep it close, and then you let LeBron do his thing near the end of the game, and he still has some energy left. But difference is, the Warriors are a vastly different team than the Celtics. So
they have probably three of the best five shooters in the league.
The Cavs aren't going to be able to play as poorly against the Celtics as they did in the first half of Game 7.
Oh, no, they'll lose by 30 if they do.
And I think, again, that's the recipe. Slow it way down, out-rebound the Warriors. Your shooters make a high percentage of shots. They get hot. LeBron dominates. And I think Kevin Love is going to be so huge because...
Yeah, do they start him at the five, or do they keep him at the four and keep Tristan in?
Beat the Warriors if it's LeBron and everyone else, and the supporting cast giving him what they've been giving him till this point in the playoffs. LeBron can average 40 points, 13 rebounds, and 13 assists a game on 55% shooting, and there's still a pass for the Cavs to lose this finals. And it's going to be hard as hell for LeBron. And I think they're definitely starting Love at the five. I think they're absolutely doing that. And I'll give you two reasons for it, and you can tell me what you think. So, number one, when the Cavs have beat the Warriors before, it's because they've massively out-rebounded the Warriors. And two, because the Warriors roster as currently constructed doesn't pose enough of a threat all around that you can't at least try to find somewhere for Kevin Love to hide. And the Warriors are absolutely going to seek Kevin Love out in the pick and roll. They're going to run him through the ringer. He's going to get tired. He's going to get beat up. Okay. And he's going to get exploited. That's what's going to happen. When Kevin Love is on the floor, the Warriors and other really smart teams will find a way to exploit him, just like the Celtics did with Al Horford during periods of last series. But like we mentioned earlier, this Warriors team does not have the depth they used to, especially if Andre Iguodala is not going to be healthy and or playing in the first place. And because they don't have a really good fifth starter right now, they have a lot of centers and none of them are really good. So
that's generous.
I don't think Kevin Love is going to be able to play 40 minutes a game in this series because he's not the type of player at this point in his career. But I think he's going to start, and I think that gives the Cavs the best chance. And because if Kevin Love starts alongside Thompson, that also gives Jeff Green his proper role off the bench. So
you're saying he should start at the four then, not the five?
You know, it doesn't really – I mean, look.
Because Thompson, I think, can guard – because I think then you could put Love
on the
Warriors
center. In for the finals.
Draymond.
Or Looney.
Or Kevon Looney.
Right.
Yeah,
so the designations between four and five don't really matter because offensively we know what Kevin Love and Thompson's role are. Thompson's the role man, Kevin Love's the floor spacer. And we know on the defensive end that Thompson's gonna be on Draymond and Kevin Love's gonna be on the weakest offensive player. So
wouldn't you put LeBron on Draymond, though?
Oh, LeBron's going to be on Draymond for a lot.
And then Jeff Green will be on KD.
Yeah, that's when the Cavs go small. I think off the bat, you know, the Cavs...
Or Thompson could even be on KD.
I think off the bat, the Cavs are probably going to have LeBron on KD. And I think...
Great.
I know. But the hope is that with Kevin Love on the floor, there's going to be enough offense that LeBron doesn't have to do everything himself, at least when Love's on the floor. And that's my point, is the Cavs are going to have to get offense out of Kevin Love, and they're going to have to get points when he's on the floor, because it's going to be a struggle defensively for him. But
he's going to have to be Minnesota Kevin Love for us to have a chance. He's going to have to average like 25 and 13.
Yeah, he's going to have to be big. And honestly, Kevin Love struggled against the Warriors in previous series. But this season, when the Cavs have matched up, and for the most part in last year's finals, Kevin Love has been like pretty solid against the Warriors.
I mean, it wasn't the offense last year for the Cavs that did them in. It was the fact that they couldn't freaking stop the Warriors.
Right.
Like, they scored with them fine because they still had Kyrie putting in buckets. And, I mean, and Kevin Love was still playing an integral role. They just couldn't stop them.
Right.
So I think that's why you start Thompson at the five to give Love a little bit more help on the rebounding end and on the defensive end. Because
yeah,
I think, like you said, we need Jeff Green as that versatile chess piece off the bench to be able to match up with some of those guys where, like, if Jordan Bell gets hot or one of their – or Patrick McCall is coming back, so he might even be important in their rotation. Because, like you said, they don't have a lot of guys.
I think, if anything, Thompson probably becomes a bench player in the series, if there is anything, and pushes Nance out of the rotation in favor of more Jeff Green and more Kevin Love at center. And
Jeff Green.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. But, like, at this point, look at the Cavs roster. I don't think the Cavs can beat the Warriors. I think
we don't really have a choice.
I think the Cavs can give the Warriors a great run for their money, but matchups wise, it's not a good series for the Cavs because the Cavs' best lineups are usually featuring two big men, or they go small with LeBron at the four, and then they're
bad defensively,
right? And I think that's the point: is Jeff Green. Someone's going to have to guard Kevin Durant. If the Cavs are playing Thompson, that's going to have to be LeBron, and that's not sustainable for a majority of minutes in a series. So I think Kevin Love and Thompson are each going to play, you know, Love's going to play probably 32 minutes a game. Thompson's going to play probably around 30, and that's not going to leave many minutes for Nance. So I think the Cavs are going to start Thompson and Love, but I think they're going to play a majority of their minutes small because Jeff Green at this point is one of the Cavs' better players and someone has to guard KD. And Jeff Green is pretty much the Cavs' best option for that, this is a massively uphill battle.
I think Nance will only pretty much play when Kevon Looney or Jordan Bell's playing and he'll guard them. That's pretty much what I think.
It's going to be difficult, obviously. And I think, you know, I don't know what chance I give the Cavs. Would I be shocked if the Cavs won the series? I don't know. Would I be surprised? Absolutely. I might be pretty shocked, honestly.
Oh, I'd be shocked.
It's just when you have LeBron, there's always that chance because he's LeBron. By the way, just a brief, very brief bullet point on legacies, et cetera, et cetera. If LeBron wins this title,
he's the GOAT.
Not only is he the greatest of all time, I think without dispute, this is his greatest accomplishment.
He should just retire if he wins this year.
I think 2016 is probably LeBron's greatest achievement at this point in his career. You could argue 07. You could argue getting this far this year. You could argue the Heat year when they beat the Celtics in the conference finals. And then the Heat year they beat the Spurs. You know, these are the arguments, but it's just, it's going to be a almost perfectly played game by the Cavs, and they haven't really done that much this year at all. So,
yeah,
I don't know, but we'll see. You know, I think, like I said at the top of the podcast, that's what we just discussed is kind of why I feel like if LeBron has an incredible series and the Cavs lose, I'm really not going to be that upset about it because it's a massive, massive uphill battle. And as long as LeBron is great, these games are going to be worth watching and they're going to be fun. And, you know, that's pretty much what we're going for, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
I think everyone's hoping, as a Cavs fan, I'm just hoping for a really competitive series. A win would be absolutely fantastic. But I'm really just hoping that there's some type of drama
in terms of
who's
going
to win in this series. I mean, if you told me the Cavs got one win right now, I'd probably be a little disappointed. I'm hoping they can at least get to Game 6. And that's the thing. If the Cavs can get to Game 6 at home, they have a shot. You win Game 6 at home, and it's LeBron into Game 7. And that's just what the Cavs have to do. They have to try and hang around in these games. They have to try and capitalize if the Warriors play lazy. and they have to steal a cup one game in Golden State and take care of business at home. At least get to a game six. That's what the Cavs have to do.
I think that's big.
We can briefly discuss the Rockets-Warriors series. I think it's pretty disappointing, the result. Or not even the result, but how we got to the result of that series. Because I expected the Warriors to go to the finals. This is what you and me have been saying for the entire season. Through all the drama, through all the great seasons from other teams, the down moments from Warriors and Cavs, both of us have expected this matchup from the jump and pretty much at any point throughout the year. And here we are. So I think the only thing that I'm really upset about is the fact that Chris Paul got hurt and missed Game 6 and Game 7. Because if Chris Paul was playing Game 7, there's a really, really good chance
the Rockets were playing the Rockets this off.
Or even maybe Game 6. And I think it's disappointing when injuries happen in the NBA a lot. And they affect every playoffs and every series and every champion. There's some injury that affects the race along the way. But for it to be Game 6 and Game 7 when the Rockets had a lead and needed one more game, and for it to be Chris Paul, who has basically played his entire career to get to this point, and he finally got there, and he didn't have a chance. And it's the Warriors who have gotten breaks like this before and have been there 3 years in a row. And this Rockets team has been designed solely to beat the Warriors. This entire Rockets team was designed, how do we beat the Warriors? And it looked like they might have had the recipe for it. And 1 minute left in Game 5. An incredible win for the Rockets. And they lost Chris Paul. And I just think it sucks. It sucks for the NBA. It sucks for Chris Paul. It sucks for the Rockets. It sucks for everyone who cares about basketball.
Sucks for the Cavs.
Sucks for the Cavs. But, you know, it's not the first time it happened. And it's not the first. Or the last time, you know.
Or the last time, yeah.
It's not the first or the last time. And the two teams that I expect to be playing are playing.
For the fourth time in a row.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Well. Well, obviously we'll have more – we'll definitely be able to get in more to the breakdowns and matchups and stuff like that once we – in the next couple days before Game 1, because Game 1 is Thursday at 8 or 9?
I think they're all at 9 because –
That makes no sense.
Yeah, they're all at 9. So well, that's how it goes. You know? There's one at 8. The Sunday games are at 8. Everything else is 9.
Oh, so, early birds.
Well, yeah, early birds, 8 o'clock. But, yeah, you know, it's – I think that despite the fact that a lot of the people around the NBA are, you know, oh, here we go again, these series have been fantastic, a lot of them. And last year's not so much. But these have been incredible clashes, and I think it's going to be entertaining as hell no matter what happens. And we'll see – you know, we'll see what the Cavs can do. You have any final thoughts, Graham?
I don't think so. I think we've done a pretty good job just really just discussing how great LeBron is, how just it's going to be a uphill battle. But I think when you have the best player in the world and arguably the best player of all time, I think there's not such a thing as no chance. Obviously, it's going to be tough, but
yep.
I think if anyone can carry us to this mountaintop, it's going to be LeBron.
Fair enough. Do you want to give one more official I told you so to the world about Jeff Green on the way out?
Y'all were hating. Jeff Green is exactly what we needed. And I hope you all enjoy watching him shut down Kevin Durant. All right, I'm done.
Oh, my God. Now all of a sudden Jeff Green's the second coming of LeBron. Okay,
No, he's the second coming of Marcus Morris, who can guard LeBron.
Oh, God, no. Don't. No, no, no. We're not doing this. He can't, and everyone knows it. Anyways, it's been up and down the season, and throughout it all,
the Cavs still made the finals.
The Cavs and the Warriors are still playing the finals. And that's how it goes sometimes in the NBA. We'll be back with another podcast, I would say, either after Game 1 or 2, depending on whether anything incredible happens in Game 1. That forces us to podcast. If not,
we'll probably be podcasting
after Game 2. The good thing for the Cavs is there's multiple days off between most of the games in this series, and I think that's a huge advantage for the Cavs, considering, you know, just trying to keep LeBron upright is a challenge when he's doing this much. So we'll see. We'll talk to you guys soon. Until then, TreeCityRecords.com, at TreeCityRecords on Twitter. That is our group. There's been a bunch of new music added in the past week or so. Some really, really good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Check me out on Twitter at @abaker_sports. Check Graham out on Twitter at @GTMOHAN. And until next time, we'll see what the Cavs can do.
Yes, we will. I'm Graham Mullen.
I'm Andrew Baker. Peace.
Peace.